Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Edition of Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferrara, episode number 80, and I am Magic Mike, and how are you tonight? We got some technical difficulties, so I'm going to take a break, and we'll be right back with after this song's over. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully this works. We will just know in 2 seconds. All right, and it works, ladies and gentlemen. We are back. This is Pro Wrestling Now with your host, Magic Mike Ferrara, and boy, do we have a show for you tonight. But before we do that, let me just tell you something that go to totallydriventv.com. That's right, totallydriventv.com, where you can hear and see our website. We have a beautiful website set up by the crew, the whole crew, and nothing but the crew. So, Chris and Lillian from 80s TV, episode number 11, that's on there. Big Daddy's Hard Talks on there, TV Nation, the DC TV specials on there, NFL Roundup with me is on there, the Mojo Show's on there, all your favorites are on there, Mavericks Comic Book Roundup is on there, but this is the wrestling show that you wanted to know about. Go to Pro Wrestling Now with your host, Magic Mike Ferrara, on Facebook, and also Twitter, Magic Mike Ferrara, F-E-R-R-A. And that's the number 4, and it's at NotWeb for Life. So shoot me a tweet there, ladies and gentlemen. Check it out. Check all our stuff out. 718-508-9883. So, Bill Goldberg's back. I said how I felt about Goldberg last week. I think Goldberg should still be retired. I always thought that Goldberg was a sloppy wrestler. I think he's a power guy, and I don't think he's good for wrestling. But you know what? Hey, he's Goldberg, and maybe he'll get a spot in the WWE Hall of Fame through all this. I guess that's what he's looking for. And you know, he's in the game, and the game's pretty cool. You know, talk some W2K17 with you. I could do that as well. I played the game, and the game is really good. I have it for PlayStation 3. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in this game that they could have done a little differently. You know, I think making you get, you know, your own characters by setting, milestones for stuff is ridiculous. Because, you know, who's going to win 800 matches to unlock a Bret Hart or a Jimmy Neal Neidhart? So I just am lazy, and I went to and I got a cheat code, another cheat code. I bought something, and I unlocked all of them. So I get to play with all of them. 718-508-9883. If you played the new 2K17 game, let me know how it is. Definitely, I cannot believe it's out. Goldberg's awesome in the game, but last night Goldberg was awesome as well. We're gonna get into that. You know what? I might as well do that because I got a guest coming up in just a little while. A good friend of the show, Mr. Carl XL. LeDuc is going to be on the show. Yes, Mr. LeDuc is going to be on the show. Going to give him a call in just a second or two. So we are going to do a Monday Night Raw recap. And last night, Seth Rollins wrestled Chris Jericho in what was a really good match. Seth Rollins beat Jericho. I think Jericho was good, but I think he's coming to an end with the whole deal with his partner. Mark Henry and the Golden Truth defeated Titus O'Neil and the Shining Stars. Mark Henry's huge. I love Henry, but he's just a big guy. Raw Tag Team Champion Big E defeated Sheamus in what was a good match. Bo Dallas defeated Neville, and I think that's bullshit. I think Neville is a better guy than Bo Dallas, better wrestler anyway. Dana Brooke defeated Bayley. Braun Strowman defeated the Mile High 2-0. United States Champion Roman Reigns confronted Rusev and Lana. Big Cass defeated Carl Anderson, which is weird. Goldberg accepted Brock Lesnar challenge. And Brian Kendrick, Tony Nese, and Drew Gulak defeated Perkins, Cedric Alexander, and Rich Swann. So that was your matches from last night. As I said tonight, we're going to have SmackDown also, and could James Ellsworth be the next champion? I doubt it. Would there be a fallout if Naomi beats Alexa Bliss again? I doubt it. The Lone Wolf gets his sights set on the Real American. Can Orton repel the power of the Wyatt family? And who can set themselves apart in the tag team division? So that's going to be tonight. Also, on tonight's show, right now, we're going to do a Survivor Series recap. Survivor Series is a big tradition. I also want to let you know right after this show to stay tuned, please, guys. Stay tuned for my friend, Smith Hart, as he does the Hart Grapevine. And we're going to talk tonight to the legendary Dory Funk Jr. If you don't know who Dory Funk Jr. is and you've heard of Terry Funk, well, that's his brother. Survivor Series, we're going to do Survivor Series right now. Survivor Series was the first Survivor Series pay-per-view in 1987, produced by the World Wrestling Federation. It took place on Thanksgiving Day. Now, everybody should know this about the Survivor Series, and I'm going to do a recap when I come back from commercial breaks because I got to go get my guest. So right now, without further ado, here's a commercial break for you.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. As I was saying, we're going to have Mr. Carl LeDuc come on the show, Mr. XL. And he's from Canada, and his family are the LeDucs. And, so I cannot wait.
If you don't know, now you know. My name is Carl XL, the size that hurts, the Quebec wrestling terrorist. I'm coming after you. You better bow down to the regime, cause I am the man. I will make you pay. You will show me respect. Carl XL, the size that hurts. La grandeur qui fait mal. La grandeur qui fait mal. That hurts, the Quebec wrestling terrorists. I'm coming after you. You better bow down to the regime, cause I am the man. I will make you pay. You will show me respect. Carl XL, the size that hurts. La grandeur qui fait mal.
What was that about? Hold on a second. I don't know. All I know is I was starting to talk about Carl LeDuc, and that XL music came on. I guess he's in the building. Hey, Carl, are you there?
Yes, what's up, Magic Mike? What's up, NYC? Just like you say, guys, how you doing?
What is up over there, and how you doing, and what the heck happened to my station? All I know is that I was talking about you, and I wasn't saying anything bad about you. I just said about your family, the famous LeDuc family. And what happened? I got this music on. Somebody must have rigged it because you're here now with us. And oh my goodness! But I tell you though, I got to tell you, I love the music. I think it's great. It works really good with your attitude.
Yeah, thank you, Magic Mike. It's my ring entrance music, you know. It's because I've been also in the music business, also in between the wrestling, you know, and I was managing and I was helping a friend of mine, and then we started to do some business in the music, and he's one of the top number one in the province of Quebec in French hip hop. And I went to the studio a few weeks ago, and we just decided to do a little something, you know. So just to be a little something different, you know, because when you wrestle in the indie scenes, you always get fine ideas, you know, to reinvent yourself, you know. And I thought it was time for me to have my own little something, you know. And that's what we decided to do, and that's what happened in that studio last week, 2 weekends ago.
Yes, and you know, this interview came from an interview that you were on with your dad when you were on the Great Smith Hearts show, and unfortunately Smith is not going to be with us tonight. But later on tonight, he's getting ready for his interview. He has an interview with Dory Funk Jr. tonight.
Oh wow! No, Smith always got great interviews, and Smith know a lot of people in this business and everything, and then I'm happy that the people are responding to you guys to accepting those interviews, because those guys are, you know, like the big, the like, how can I say that in proper English so people can understand? Because obviously, you know by now that I'm French, so sometimes I kind of look for my words and stuff like that. So I hope the audience will be able to understand me perfectly.
No, they'll understand it because I'm translating right now.
Okay, that's correct. But you know what? I'll just say that, you know, small men are difficult to approach. Big men, you know, like those Funks and other people you get on the shows, they're big in nature. They're big in the public eyes. But you know,
right.
They always ready to come and serve and then give their time back to the community or whatever for promotion of promoting a show or something like that. You know, wrestling people are a lot about a lot about a business in a way that give time back, because they know without those people out there coming and paying to come see them wrestle, they will not be there, you know. They will not be big, you know. They will, you know. So that's how it's done, and I'm happy that you guys having big names on your show. And I feel special because my last name is probably big, but I'm not as big as those guys. So I'm grateful to be on the show.
I got to stop you there. You are big, my friend. You're an independent wrestler, so, and you're doing big things. And you know what, you are preceding your father and your uncle in what was the LeDuc name. In you know, you told me last week to watch out for the LeDuc, and you told me to watch out for the Jerry the King Lawler interviews with him, and I did, and they were very good.
Yeah, I guess my uncle Joe LeDuc is more known in the States, you know, especially in the 80s, 90s, and
right.
Everything. He was a superstar, I can say, you know, like every territory he went, he was the top heel, and then he was making good money to the promoters, so the promoters used him a lot, you know. Joe LeDuc was a big thing back in the 80s, even if you ask to certain wrestlers of today, they'll remember and they'll say that Joe LeDuc is a name just like Jerry the King Lawler or the Funks or the Hearts or even Dusty Rhodes, you know, the Rhodes family.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Now Jimmy, the Mouth of the South, Hart, I seen a video of him, and I guess he was managing your uncle down in Memphis. But before we get on to you, because we're going to go on to you and your stuff right
yeah.
now, we're talking about your famous family. I also want you to know that last week we interviewed Sir Mo from Men on the Mission.
Yes.
And we were talking about Owen Hart and some of the things that Owen has done to all these guys, and being that you know Owen, tonight, maybe you can tell us some Owen stories as well.
Yeah, I can tell you about Owen's story, of course. He was a generous and good guy. I got stories about GBL, if you want me to, Rocky Shea.
Yeah, whatever you want to tell me.
So let's start by Owen, because Owen, in my books, for me, is one of the best out there. In the ring and outside the ring. And what I'm saying about outside the ring, he do good stuff to the people, you know. He used to be a joker. He used to do a lot of ribs. For the people who don't know, it's the language that we say between each other when we're just pranking or doing some prank jokes on people and everything, you know. But Owen was nice to me because, like I said, for your audience there, Magic Mike, is I started wrestling in 95, but then 96 I had a call from WWF. I didn't really know how to wrestle yet back then, I'll be frank honest with you. And then that's when I met Owen, but I met Owen like a few years ago before I came into WWF, in a house show, you know. My dad brought me backstage and everything. I met Brett and I met Owen. And they looked to my dad, and they kind of reminisced what my dad did over there in Calgary for Stampede Wrestling back in the 60s and the 70s and everything. And they look at me and said, "Why do you want to try to be in the business? You seem to have the size, the look, and everything. So that would be good if you can join, you know, the heritage of your family and go on with the wrestling career and everything." Because they were a second generation, and I guess I was a second generation, but not yet, because I didn't really start to wrestle. So it kind of went to my head, and I was thinking about it and everything, and then a chance, and then I had a chance to start wrestling and everything. Did training and everything, and then I had even a year in the business. WF called me up because of Joan Russo proposing my name with Ray Russo. And then I had the call, and I went up there, but I was not even ready yet. So it was a tough time for me and everything up there and everything. But in the meantime, there, I had a chance to meet Owen, and Owen was nice enough to show me the business, explain me the business and everything. And when you go out there alone back in those days when I was in there, you needed some people, you know, some kind of friends. Because if not, it could be really dangerous for you, or a lot of stuff will happen to you backstage and everything. So Owen brought me under his wing, you know. And then I start traveling with the boys and everything, and my roommate was Owen Hart. And the first thing that he said, that you're second generation. You know what? I can afford. I do enough money. I'm a stage of my career. I can afford my own hotel room, because back then we're paying. We don't pay for the airfare, but we're paying for the hotel's room and the food and the rental cars to travel town to town. So he said that I'll do a deal with you. You're going to stay in my room. So that's going to get you out of trouble. And then I can't afford to pay my own room and everything, but I'll let you stay in for with me. I'm not going to charge you anything. But in return, all the money I make you save on the road, send them back to your dad. And remember where you're coming from, you know. So that's how it was Owen, you know, was with me and everything. And afterwards, I was roughed up on the tour and everything. And then Owen took me on the side and everything. He asked me a question. I said, yes, Owen. He said, you're second generation. I said, yes, that's correct. But you have no experience yet, you know. Do you want a 6-month or you want a 25-year career? I said, obviously, I want a 25-year career. And he told me at the time that the roster was pretty packed. No open spots was ready for me and everything by the experience I was having. So he's the one who set me up at the Hart House, at his dad, at Mr. Hart's, and then introduced me to Bruce Hart. And then that's when I learned my wrestling career and everything, because he said, if you stay with us in 6 months, you'll be burned and nobody will hire you or will use you or sort of anything, and you'll be quitting the business because you'll be so fed up. So he said, I'm going to set you up at my dad's house. You're going to sleep there. And you're going to live there. And then you'll go to Bruce Hart wrestling camp in the dungeon. And he said, go learn how to be a referee. Go learn how to be a wrestler. Go learn how to take a bump. Go learn how to be a promoter, you know. And then from then, you'll be able to have a 25-year career if you don't come back and made it with the WWF, or now it's called E. At least you have a sort of career, and you'll be able to make some dollars with the wrestling business because you will know everything, every aspect. For the Hearts, that was really important to learn every step of the business, you know. Not just being a wrestler, you know. You know, just, you know, all the aspect of the wrestling business, Owen opened me the door for that and taught me, and then sent me to Bruce, like I said, and then that's where I really taught my my craft and everything, you know. And then after that, I broke my leg, I guess, and everything. So I didn't, like, aspire to go back up there and try to go back up there and everything. And then I went on the independent circuit.
So I was going to ask you a question, actually.
Yeah.
Did you wrestle for Stampede Wrestling?
Yes, of course I wrestled for Stampede Wrestling. I became one of the Tai Chi champions there. But like I said, I learned every aspect of the business. But when I went down there, so I don't feel the pressure of the last name and everything, you know. They put me under another name just to see how I'm going to react and everything, and how I will like the gimmick and everything. And then this gimmick was François Einstein, you know, from France. And I was supposed to be like a little bit mumbling my words, look funny and everything. And then a lot of people in the dressing room back then was making fun of that gimmick and find that gimmick stupid and everything. But I learned from Bruce. Bruce told me, you know what, you gotta do whatever the office wants you to do and everything, and you gotta try to do anything, you know, just like Owen told me, you know, you gotta try to be a good a heel or a face. You gotta learn every aspect so you can be useful for any kind of sort of thing when you have a call or when you'll be booked. You'll be handy and you'll be helpful for the show and everything. So I did kind of a stupid gimmick, but I was a little bit mad over it and everything at first, but I decided to play along with it, and I accept the gimmick that they gave me and everything. Maybe there was a test to see my attitude or something like that, and guess what? By accepting that and playing that role, I got over with the fan, and that put me on top in Stampede Wrestling for a few years there. I was there for 4 years, so I was on top for 4 years, you know, touring, yeah, doing the main events, having a lot of wins and stuff like that, just because the gimmick was over with the crowd and I decided to play the gimmick, you know. Sometimes, you know, you can give yourself a role and you're not happy, but you just shut your mouth and do your role. And then at the end, when you'll get a certain recognition from the people, from the office, or from the fans, or whatever, you have a little bit more input into your role, and you'll be able to change it a little bit, you know, at its goal.
Yep.
You know, a lot of wrestler who comes in WWF or E will go with a gimmick, and they don't really liked it at first, until that it became somebody, and then they'll be able to manage and talk with the office, because now they're having some input and a little bit more power, and then that's where you become like somebody else afterwards, and maybe you're more happy or you're not, depending what's his offer for you, what offer is on the table for you.
It is something when you talk about that. You know, you have a lot of things that we're going over. And for those of you who don't know, we're talking right now, I'm talking with Mr. Carl XL, the Duke, a good friend of mine, and, of course, you know, like you said, the Hart family and friends and stuff. Well, you know, what I wanted to ask you, we'll talk about next, was that all the talent that went to WWF at the time before you, of course, you know, names like Bret Hart, Owen Hart, the British Bulldog, Dynamite Kid, Brian Pillman, Bad News Brown, Honky Tonk Man, the Junkyard Dog, Chris Benoit, guys like that. And then you talk about a gimmick. There was a gimmick in WWF that, just to me, I didn't like the gimmick. He was Justin Hawk Bradshaw. You know him as JBL. Do you have any good JBL stories?
Yeah, I got some JBL stories. Like that's a guy who started with Justin Hawk Bradshaw, got some respect, proved that he's a hardworking person in the ring and everything, and end up using another name and a gimmick that suits him better, you know?
Yep, and they gave him a manager, too.
Yeah, and I don't know if he was happy with that, but this guy knows, he's pretty smart, he knows a lot about the business, so he shut his mouth and just waited his time, and when his time was come there, he became a world champion. And JBL, in 96, I was touring against him. I didn't know how to wrestle. He had a lot of experience and everything. He had to put me over. His manager, obviously, was not happy with that at the time and everything, to put a guy who doesn't know how to wrestle yet, to put his wrestler over, you know. And then what happened, he put me over and he shut his mouth, and he was pretty good to me and everything, you know. We tore, and then he was the heel, and I was the baby face. And then since I'm from the province of Quebec, just to explain to the American people out there who's listening there, the province of Quebec is a separatist province. They want to separate from Canada, you know. It's a war. It's a battle. It's a war for decades and decades and decades going on and going on. Some people want to separate from the country, and some of them don't. So when I was touring Canada, in other provinces, just like Ontario, which is the next province to Quebec, since we're close province and Anglophone and Francophone was not getting along, you know. So what happened is I got booed one night, and I was supposed to be the baby face. And back in the 90s, a baby face is a baby face, and a heel is a heel, you know.
For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a baby face is a good guy, and a heel is a bad guy.
There you go. Yeah, that's correct. So back then I was in Ottawa, in Ontario, and I went out and I got booed, and I was supposed to be the good guy. So when JBL came out, he kind of had like a face pop. But he's supposed to be the bad guy. So he went out there in the ring and then said something to the crowd, so the crowd booed him, and then I end up having back the baby face pop. You know, that was really nice from him. Helped me a lot, you know, in the ring. Guided me as his best and everything that he could. And especially that was hard for him because he had to do a job against me. A job means I got to win over him. You know, and then when you look at it, it doesn't make any sense. He was supposed to go over, you know. He was supposed to win those matches against me, but he didn't because of my name was strong up in Canada and certain part in the U.S. So you see, he shut his mouth, did his job properly, and look, that didn't take him out a way to be becoming a world champion one day for Vince McMahon, you know. So, yeah, that's what happened with
this
guy.
And I think that right there is a good thing. There's a good Owen Hart rib that I always love when I hear it. It's my favorite rib that I've ever had, actually, about Owen. It was Owen and Yokozuna, and they were wrestling the British Bulldogs and Lex Luger. And they were in the ring, and Owen and Lex Luger supposed to pick Owen up and throw him all over the ring. But so when they get into the ring, Owen starts off with Luger. Luger goes to pick Owen up. Luger can't pick Owen up. And finally, Luger tags to to Davey Boy. Davey Boy comes in, slams Owen all over the place, picks him up, drops him down, picks him up, throws him from post to post. What happened was, it was a rib, because every time Luger tried to pick up up Owen, Owen would hook onto Luger, and he wouldn't let him go.
Yeah, that's typical Owen, I guess.
Lex Luger told me that story. Hello?
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay, I was going to say, Lex Luger told me that story at an independent show when I got to meet Luger. We talked and we laughed about Owen, and Lex said to me, thank you for making me laugh again. He says, every time I miss Owen, I hope a fan comes up to me and talks about Owen. And he said to me,
Where did you hear that story?
And I told him about Owen Hart's DVD. And if anybody wants to buy Owen Hart's DVD, it's out right now. You could get it, the Owen Hart story. Very good DVD. I've watched it 1,000 times. I think I've worn it out already.
Yeah, Owen was a funny guy, and he was really respected backstage and everything, you know. He was the guy who was making everybody laugh, you know. And then I had a chance also to wrestle against Owen, and Owen kind of played me a little rib there in the ring. He made me run through the ropes so many times, back and forth, you know. You know, just to rib me. So he didn't try to pick me up, but he made me run to the ropes there so many times in one match. That was unbelievable, you know. And
Owen ever wrestle you armed? Did Owen ever have like arm stuff on him, like he played tricks in the ring? Guys say that Owen used to come out.
Yes, but I think that I was starting, and you already know I was pretty much nervous, and I was lacking of experience back then, you know. So the only thing that he did in the ring was make me run through the ropes so many times in a match, so I kind of blew up quickly and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that was Owen, and that was Owen.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I think.
Yeah.
You
were in his room a lot of times, right? Being in Owen's room. Have you ever witnessed Owen pull a prank on people with the phone?
No. No, I never, Owen is a family man, you know. When the show is over there, he likes to go straight to the hotel room and everything, you know. And because I was staying with him and everything, he always gave me a trick. Never give your name. Give a different name at the front desk, you know. So nobody is going to come and try to find out which room you are in. Try to do a prank or something like that. Maybe he did it in other times, but by the time I was there, he was basically more taking time to teach me how the business work and how to understand a lot of stuff and everything, you know. He never goes out. He was never going out when I was there and everything, and I don't think he did before or after, you know. He's a family man, so he goes straight to his we're going to go grab something to eat. And go straight to the room and everything. And he always liked to call back home and everything. And when he was calling home, I gave him privacy. And I was leaving the room for 20 minutes so he can do his business with his family and everything, you know. That's the kind of respect that I got for Owen back then, you know. I didn't want to...
Well, that's nice.
You know, I didn't want to... Because he was sharing me a free room, you know. And back then, you don't do much money when you start in the business and everything. And everything is cost, you know, everything is costly for you and everything, you know. But he had an independent financial independent situation that was pretty good for him and everything. So that was nice for him. So that was kind of the thing that I kind of did for him when I was a roommate. Give him his privacy, you know.
I was going to get into your childhood because we gotta keep on going. I mean, we could talk about Owen all night, and then and then I'll probably have to have you on next week again, you know?
No problem.
We could do maybe a part one, and we'll have a part two. I could bring you back next week. But,
no problem. It's done deal.
So talking about Owen, which I got to tell you, I was a big fan of the Hart family, and I still am, because I work with Smith Hart. Smith is one of the best guys that I became friends with. Smith and I talk about anything. He teaches me about the business. He loves the business. Smith is a very knowledgeable guy. about the business.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine what I can say about the heart.
Well, I was going to say, I have two more questions for you about this, but what's your most, you know, you spent time with Owen. Did you ever spend any time with Brett?
No, Brett, because he was out on an injury and everything, you know. I would see Brett on Sunday
dinners.
Yeah, he was out on an injury in 96 and everything. That was after WrestleMania that I came.
That's right.
When he lost to Shawn Michaels and everything, and he went for a knee operation and everything. But I would see Brett on Sunday dinners, you know, because every Sunday, all the family and the grandchildren gathered to the house and everything, you know, for the Sunday dinner, you know.
Right.
So, but like you say,
talking about Mr. Hart. You were talking about Mr. Hart.
Yes.
You call him Stu for respect. How did Mr. Hart like you? He liked you?
Yeah, I think so, because a lot of people call him Stu, but I always call him Mr. Hart. And everything, you know, he opened his door to me and everything. I was able to eat and sleep there. So I was saving money on the rent and everything, never charged me nothing. And every night there, before you go to bed, we used to go in the kitchen, sat down, and he was making cup of tea and everything. And he loved his cup of tea with a spoon of white onion in it and everything. And then we're just talking about business, and he was talking about a lot of stuff, you know. And a lot of respect. But at first, when I came in, I asked him, can I be stretched and everything? And he told me, I'm not going to, I don't stretch no more, you know, and everything.
Right.
So that was it. And then we were just talking every night about the business and everything. He was giving me a lot of good advice, some advice that I took and some advice I put on the side and everything. And today, when I look back, I should listen to everything, you know. Because I ended up having my broken leg, and one advice he told me, so when you learn enough in the territory, it's time to go on and move on on your career and try to go open doors, you know. But me, I stayed a little bit maybe too long there over there and everything, because I got attached to a young boy that was one of the son of Bruce. Is cerebral palsy, and then I got attached to that little kid and everything, and then he adopted me. I adopted him, and then that's what kept me a little bit longer in Calgary and everything, you know. And then that's when I end up having my broken leg. But just to rewind it a little bit, when you say that I talk about Smith and Smith teaching me a lot about the business, all the hearts are passionate about the business, you know, and all the hearts, when you met one, you can sit down with them, you know, with a cup of tea or coffee or a drink, whatever, and talk about wrestling and talk about the business. They always open mind, and they like to pass on information. They like to teach other people, you know. That's why you had a lot of wrestler coming out from the dungeon that made it, you know. They were successful after being in dungeon after a while, after being in Stampede Wrestling. You can name all the names that you mentioned to me before. They all made it to the top league, and they all became superstars, you know. We're talking about Pillman, we're talking about Benoit, we're talking about Lance Storm, we're talking about Bad News Allen, who was Bad News Brown, you know. Name them.
Chris Jericho,
they
too.
All went to the dungeon. Even Chris Jericho went down there, you know. A lot of people, you know, who went through that camp made it, you know. In my era, the people who kind of make it when I was down there afterward was Johnny Devine, who went to TNA, and after he became a successful indie wrestler, you know. So, no, you know, the dungeon is kind of the Bible of the wrestling, you know. When you have the chance, it's kind of the church, you know. You go there, you learn your craft, and after, if you're smart enough, you can be a self-made man in the business.
Yeah, Johnny Devine also went to WWF as well, and he, so, yeah, you're right when you talk about you know, when you talk about the good in the business and the bad in the business. Now, the last time that we spoke, you told me a story, and of course, you know, of course on this show, anything goes. You could talk about anything.
I'm open my person, you know.
I'm going with this then, because it's a story I wanted to tell us. It's about Sid
yes.
Vicious. I know you and Sid got to an argument, and I want you to tell me about it. If you can.
I'll talk about it. What happened there in 96, I was touring with the people and everything, you know. And then Triple H came back after my match. He came and tried to shit disturbing me, you know, by saying that GBL was stiff on that clothesline. How do I feel? You want to add my tuts out. And I said, yeah, it's true. You were stiff, but, you know, it's okay, I guess. And then he went back to GBL and then said, oh, baby, because he used to call me back then, Babyface LeDuc, backstage. So he said, oh, Babyface LeDuc, say that you're stiff. You're like a crowbar and everything. You hurt people in the ring and everything. That was not true. I didn't say that and everything. So GBL came back to me and everything. And he asked to say, well, what's the problem? And I'm good with you in the ring and everything. Why are you bad-mouthing me and stuff like that? I said, no, it's a misunderstanding and everything. So they kind of, and some people was around me and everything, and Sid was in the dressing room. And Sid started talking to me and everything about me shutting my mouth and not saying nothing. And then I respond back, you know, because back then I was a little bit hot-headed. I wanted to prove myself. I didn't want to show I was scared or nothing. And then Sid started yelling at me backstage and everything. And then a fight almost came out between me and Sid. And then afterwards, Owen came and grabbed me. And then we went back to the hotel and everything. And then Sid called me in my room. He said, I answered, hello? And he said, this is Sid Vicious. Because Sid, his name was Psycho Sid in the WWE. But he always liked to be called Sid Vicious. So he said, this is Sid Vicious. Are you hungry, kid? I said, yeah. I'm going to buy you $30 steaks, and I'm going to show you some matter. Get downstairs right now. I'm waiting for you. I said, oh, my God. The fight's going to come out in the lobby or something like that. So I was nervous and everything. I go down. We're having dinner and everything. And he said, sit down. I want to talk to you. I said, yes, go ahead, sir. And he said that you're a piece of shit. Right off the bat, I said, okay. He said, the only reason why you're sitting in front of me, because I don't respect you at all, because you're a piece of shit, but I respect your uncle and everything. And you're fresh, you're new in the business, and you don't know how it works, so I'm going to show you some matters, and I'm going to explain you some stuff that you don't know that you should know so you can stay out of trouble. So, and the reason why he explained me the reason why he's going to help me out, because Joe LeDuc, when he was wrestling in Memphis, because Sid was from Memphis, he used to carry my uncle's bag to go see the wrestling show because he didn't have any money to pay the show. So he was carrying the bag from the parking lot to the building, so that allowed him to have a free ticket. And just to go in and watch Joe LeDuc wrestle the way that he was doing his mic work and the way that he was wrestling and everything. So he said that just because of that, I'm your uncle's fan. And then for now, so you don't get yourself in trouble, you'll be traveling in the rental cars with me. And once again, he didn't ask me no payments for the rental car. So he paid for my part for me, you know. And I was traveling also with, in the rental car was me, Sid Vicious, and Bob Holly. And he started to explain me how the business works and everything, you know. And at the end, I kind of earned his respect and stuff like that. But at first, I couldn't get my ass whipped big time, you know. I'm a young puppy getting in the game.
Again, I'm laughing because, like, last time I was laughing because Sid had the worst fights in the business, everybody knows Sid's background. And, you know, Sid, I don't know how Sid made it out alive in London. We all know the stories about Sid and Arn Anderson
yeah.
and Scissors. They had a big Scissors fight. But the business has changed, my friend, and that's what I'm trying to explain to you. I'm grateful that you got a lesson like that, because you didn't, you know,
oh, yeah.
you didn't mean, listen, you didn't mean disrespect, but I'll tell you what, though, if a guy came at me and told me to shut my mouth, I'd have a problem with it. Like, you know, who are you to tell me to shut my mouth?
That's what happened. Yeah, that's what happened.
Now, you were also talking about Triple H. Was Triple H good to you? How was Triple H to you?
Triple H was good to me in a way, but it was just, you know, just playing games backstage, I guess, you know, just breaking me in the business. And then I knew how disturbing was going on and everything. But if you take Triple H back then, if you take Triple H of today, Triple H now is a corporate man, you know. If a wrestler of today try to try to cause trouble with another wrestler, for sure this guy's going to be fired, because nothing is allowed like that no more, you know. It's more easier.
Well,
it's more easier for the wrestler backstage of today than back in the days. Because let's say back in the days, it was a jungle out there, you know. Wrestlers used to travel with some other wrestlers, and if you don't want to get your stuff cut up, your socks cut up backstage, you're missing a part of your clothes, you needed to know people when you're in the ring who's going to take care of your stuff backstage and everything, you know. And let's say me, when I came out there with no experience, they took a guy out of the roster to make my to give my chance, you know. So I probably took a place of some of the guys' friends backstage and everything. So that's why it was a little bit harder for me, and I can understand that, because you're protecting yourself and you're protecting your friends, because
mm-hmm.
it's your traveling partner, it's your business partner in the ring and everything. And then when you get along with a person on the road, you want to stick with that person, you know. So I was taking a place. So I had a lot of ribs going on, you know, like some stuff. Because I used to come up with some axe, wooden axe to the ring and everything, you know. But each time I turn around, my axe was disappearing, you know. And then, so what I used to do when I came to the arena, I used to come early. And I used to go dress on the other side of the building, get my gear on. I said, at least if they steal my axe, I still got my wrestling boots, I still got my tights, and I still got my jacket, you know.
Oh, that's right. You were telling me that you came with an axe and they tried to steal it a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah, I was coming up with the lumberjack gimmick because of my daddy, uncle, and everything, you know.
Right.
And then it was a different era. So me, I was a new kid on the block who's trying to steal somebody else's place, and that place was maybe somebody's friend, you know. That they didn't want
yeah.
to see left because they were having a good time with him on the road and everything, you know. Because
yeah.
when you're on the road, you spend more time with the wrestler than you can spend with your wife or kids or during
yeah.
all those years, you know. So when
yeah.
you have a good match or a good mix, you don't want to see somebody leave, you know. So you'll do anything, you know.
Yeah.
So it's easier
yeah,
to replace.
Yeah,
it's easier to replace one guy doesn't get along with 20 guys than to replace 20 guys who gets along and then keep the one guy who doesn't get along with everybody, you know? So I had to prove
right.
a lot of myself.
And, you know, back then the roster in 1996 was a different kind of roster. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and I was going to the WWF events and, you
yeah.
know, I'm going to be 39 years old, so I remember, like, the old stuff. I go back years ago. For watching the wrestling. So I'm in Madison Square Garden one time, and I'm watching Shawn Michaels versus Sid Vicious for the title. And the next thing I know, Shawn Michaels takes the, you know, loses the title to Sid. There's so many women screaming, you know, about the whole deal with Sid, and they love him and this and that, and they love Shawn Michaels. But there are women that are fainting in the aisles because of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Because Shawn Michaels.
Sure.
Because Shawn Michaels was that charismatic.
What I can say about Shawn Michaels, Shawn Michaels is charismatic, like you say, but he's a hell of a good entertainer, you know? And,
right, definitely.
And also just
what
to come,
I was
going to
say
yeah.
is he had the click back then, too.
But you know what? Diesel, Nash, and Scott Hall was gone, you know, when I was there and
right.
everything. So it was pretty much Triple H and Shawn Michaels. And yet the Godwins was traveling with them and Aldo Montoya back then also when I was there and what I
right.
witnessed and everything, you know. But in
yeah,
the airplane, I was traveling with Triple H. And then Triple H was my – in the airplane, you see, in the airplane, Triple H was my my seat partner, you know. So, but
okay.
he was always been nice to me also as well. Just one time he just tried to play a little rib on me and everything, you know. And then
right.
– And then I was getting so much worked up. That's when that Sid came in and everything. Calm down, kid, and everything. You know, nothing
mm-hmm.
wrong's happening to you and everything. But I just
right.
try to prove myself and everything, you know. And then when you see what Triple H is accomplishing with the company, with NXT and everything, that's super great and everything, you know. That
see,
now he had a chance to.
I was gonna say to see the way the business has evolved from then to now. Like for instance, when the 1-2-3 kid, Shawn Waltman, first started in WWF, you know, he right away he went over and he super glued the Smoking Guns hats. There were the Smoking Guns and they had the cowboy hats. He super glued them to their head. And Big Daddy Cool Diesel was like, listen, you're either going to get killed by them, you know, for doing that. It was cool that you did it, but you're either going to get cooled by them or maybe you're going to get fired. He goes, why don't you come with us? And Shawn Waltman went with, you know, with Scott Hall and went with Kevin Nash. When Kevin
yeah.
Nash and Scott Hall went to WCW, they made a name for themselves over there. And then, of course, the WWF guys had, you know, had their crew. And you just talked about
Shawn
Michaels.
Yeah, but you know what I can say about that?
Sorry, go ahead.
Maybe the clique got separate back then, you know what? But I kind of maybe opened doors for Triple H so the company can see more of his talent, you know? Because it's pretty hard
definitely.
When you're in the shadow of Shawn Michaels, the
mm-hmm.
Bret Harts, and you're in the shadow of Razor Ramon back then, it was called, and then the Diesel, the Kevin Nash and everything, you know? So in a good way, maybe that was good and everything, but with the incident that they did in NYC in the cage match and everything, that cost him a full year of... punishment that he accepted like a man and everything, you see? He accepted the punishment there, you know?
Right.
He was doing,
he
was doing 30-second jobs, and look today, he's the head of the company, and he's giving so much back
mm-hmm.
to the, and then, you know what? Giving the chance to the indie wrestlers to make their dreams coming true, you know? Give them a lot of opportunity, you know, for helping the company, you know, and helping the indie wrestlers
mm-hmm.
right now, you know, like NXT.
Yep.
I think
that's
that NXT
insane.
Is just like it's the number one indie fan right now, kind of, you know.
Yep.
And then
I watch NXT on Wednesday nights. It's really good. I love the women wrestlers that they have there, and I like Triple H. And what you were just talking about, I was gonna tell people that didn't know about what you were talking about, the cage incident. That was referred to as the click incident. And what happened was it was Diesel and Shawn Michaels. Diesel was the bad guy. Shawn was the good guy. And they had a cage match. And at the end of the cage match, the click members came out. And back then, you weren't supposed to videotape anything. Well, a videotape...
No, back then we called that the kayfabe. Yeah.
Yes, right. I was going to say, back then you weren't supposed to video camera. Yeah, it was kayfabe, but you weren't supposed to have a video camera in there. There were kids that had video cameras. Anyway, can you imagine if, let's say back then we had internet like we have now. Can you imagine how more trouble he would probably be in if that got, if that...
But
that
I don't know, because you know what? Once again, that kind of helped the company to evolve and change the mentality and go towards the future, you know. For the old school guy, probably pissed them off, you know. But guys, you know, the success of WWE, I think, is because they're always ready to evolve, you know, and try to do stuff that they're not supposed to do, but they'll do it, and it's working. You understand what I mean? So for an old school guy, maybe it was terrible, that thing, because now you're allotting, and then you're letting the people a little bit more secrets out of the business. But you know what? Let's say, when you're 5 years old, you used to believe in Santa Claus, right? And when you got, when you grew up, you know, you didn't, you like, if I would say that Santa Claus exists, you'll say, man, you think I'm dumb or something, you know?
The first time that I realized that something was wrong was at Madison Square Garden. Years ago, I was in Madison Square Garden, and it was Hulk Hogan versus the Macho Man Randy Savage. Liz was there, and Sherry, Liz was there in the corner of Hulk Hogan, and Sherry was in the corner of the Macho Man, and they fought for hours, okay? After the match, it seemed like hours. After the match, my father says, you know, let's go get something to eat. He was hungry. So he took me to a restaurant. We're eating. Who walks in the restaurant? Macho Man, Hogan, Liz, Sherry. I almost died when I seen them. And
there
you
go.
Everybody was going up to Hogan, you know, saying to Hogan, hi, how are you? And, you know, Hulkster was, hi, how are you? And Macho Man was waving, and it was just a different, you know, atmosphere. Then it happened again in like 2010
The people evolve, and the kids of today evolve. You know, me, the word AIDS, I didn't learn it before I was 14 years old. Ask a kid of 6, 7, 8 years old. They know about the words now, you know. They know about condoms. They know about any kind of words. Back then, we didn't know because it was pretty hidden from the society, you know.
Right.
So,
well,
the thing that
I was
going to
say,
if I want to keep my fans.
I was going to say, let's talk about your childhood. Let's start with your childhood.
At school, I used to have a lot of fights because kids used to come at me and say that wrestling was fake. And I said, no, it wasn't. So we'd get into a fight and everything, you know? And then because I was so proud that my dad was a pro wrestler and stuff, and my uncle was a pro wrestler, until that when I signed it out, my heart was crushed like anybody, just like you at the restaurant when you saw that scene. You know what I mean? But it's like that, yeah. So you want to start by my childhood. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's start with your childhood. Your Uncle Joe was also in No Holds Barred. He was in the movie with Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
But to start to start with your father. Your father and your uncle wrestled for different promotions. They worked all over, and now you're here in the world. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Florida. Actually, I started to grow up in Florida, you know. And then we moved back to Montreal and everything, you know. And then my dad retired because he didn't want to raise his children because we were three. I got a brother and a sister. He didn't want to raise his three children in a suitcase and everything. And he had a job opportunity, a big job opportunity back then, back home, that he could say no, you know. And it was paying more, you know, as much as they had fame and making money, the job offer in Quebec, since he was kind of a star and everything, he worked in the media and everything, it was really well paid. So he decided to retire and everything, you know. And then we start living our life normally again, you know, because we used to travel and we used to live different houses, and we used to go different schools and everything. And then my dad said, I can't do that to my kids and to my wife back then and everything. So he decided to retire and everything, you know? Yeah.
You know, did you get to see your father wrestle, or he was retired by that time?
No, I was too young. and then I never saw him. I saw him on tape and everything, but most likely I saw a lot of my uncle and everything, fought and everything, and if you want to bring back my uncle in the Hulk Hogan's movie, I think that my uncle did a favor back then. That's the story that I heard, and I think it's some of it is pretty much accurate and true. I think that my uncle Joe LeDuc did something to help out Hulk Hogan in a certain way and everything, and some certain stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. So back then, I think that my Hogan called to my uncle to have a part in that movie and everything, just to return the favor and everything. And then did that part and everything. And I think my uncle asked Hogan to open doors for him and everything, you know, towards Vince Jr. and everything. And then Hulk Hogan did it, open doors and everything. And then my uncle beginning of the 90s, early 90s, started to wrestle for WWF, because back then it was still called WWF. And then yeah, Zeus was supposed to wrestle each town Hulk Hogan, you know, but Zeus, mm-hmm. they only used him on pay-per-view because he was an actor and didn't really know how to wrestle, you know. So my uncle was supposed to wrestle Hogan in each of those towns. And then my uncle missed some dates and got fired over it because he had an alcohol problem back then, because in the 80s, alcohol was pretty much the thing with the wrestlers, you know, always on the road and everything. And, I think all the wrestlers in the 80s did every bar, hit every city they hit, they did all the, every bars that they went to each city, you know? And then he developed a bad habit of alcohol and everything, you know? So he missed some few days and
that's
everything.
That's sad, because that's real sad, you know, to remember all this stuff. You know, it's a telling story. I mean, I watched your uncle on what is called Prime Time Wrestling, which they used to have for WWF, and I used to see your uncle wrestle a couple of times on there. And to me, it was cool seeing your uncle. When you were a little boy, you watched a lot of wrestling?
Yeah, I used to watch a lot of wrestling when I was a kid. Of course, I was born into it. You know, it was in my blood and everything. And my dad helped out some promotion out there in the 80s. It was help out Gino Brito. And also my dad used to help out in the 70s. The Russos, who had a promotion and everything, you know. My dad used to wrestle back then. Every Monday in front of 6,000 people, that was the facility arena. Was a 6,000 arena. It was always packed on Monday night. And once a month, they used to go to the Montreal Forum. The Montreal Forum is the equivalent of MSG, you know. So it was, they're packing the house. There was 20,000 people once a month and everything. And my dad was kind of the Pat Patterson of Vince. My dad was kind of the Pat Patterson of Johnny Russo, the owner of the promotion. You know, helping out with a lot of ideas, a lot of gimmick and everything. You know, so yeah. I heard a lot about my dad. I didn't witness my dad wrestling, but a lot of other wrestlers used to talk to me about my dad. And when I was on the streets or when I was anywhere else in public and everything, people used to come and talk to me and say about stories about my dad and everything. But I saw a little bit more of Joe LeDuc wrestling and everything, you know. And, I was a big fan of them. I was proud and everything, and then each time that my uncle was wrestling close to my house and everything, he always come and sleep at my place, and he always bring me at the wrestling show, and then I was able to, and lucky enough to go backstage and meet all those guys and everything, you know. But I was born into it, I guess, and spending my child all off of my childhood or the in the backstage of a wrestling show.
Yeah, have you became friends with, you know, with before, I mean, before you got trained, have you became friends with some of these guys like Jacques and Raymond? Those guys were pretty
okay.
cool.
You want to be honest with that? I'll be honest with you, okay? You know what? Because that's the type of person I am, you know? Raymond was really good to me. Joanne Rougeau, the sister, was really good to me. She was the promoter, you know, for WWF. So she was also taking care of me on the road because she was traveling with us also as well as a promoter and everything, you know. Each town that she was promoting, she was traveling with us and everything. But Jacques is, I think, he's the most Jacques Jr. there, the Monty, or you want to call him the Quebecers, as the people know him. He opened a wrestling school in 95 when he retired and everything, you know. And then he went to go see my dad at the hospital because my dad was pretty sick and everything. And he said, after that, I met Brendan Owen and everything. My dad ended up to be in the hospital and everything because my dad did over the broadcasting radio for the retirement of Jacques against Jean-Pierre Lafitte, who was Carl Ouellette back then. Or PCO, if people know more, know him as PCO. So what happened is he came to me and said, I want to train your son. I want him to be the first student of my opening wrestling school. So my dad thought he was doing a good thing and everything, and then I ended up going there and everything, you know. And then it was just a little bit before I went to WWF, you know. And then I pay Jacques Rougeau money to train, but I never got trained by him, you know. We always went to go play golf, and he would serve me as his caddy and stuff like that.
Oh, so, my God, really?
Yeah, my parents got mad and everything, you know. And I had a bad experience. I didn't talk nothing. I paid him big money and everything. And then, I can say my first years of experience was really bad. Because after shock, went to WWF, and then an other bad experience. My good experience started when Owen brought me to Calgary and everything. And then what happened is I didn't get trained once. And then I went on tour. They prepared my match with somebody else in the backyard. And then we went on tour and everything. But because of my last name, I was getting a lot of good pop from the crowd, you know. And then at one point... Abdullah was on my first tour of wrestling, you know, and then Abdullah the Butcher, and then he had a segment. All the wrestlers at the end, they come, and then Abdullah just knocked them all out. And just before shock, he was a promoter. He was not even wrestling. He's supposed to come and save the world and everything. And then I guess that's okay. That's his company. But me, I was the last one out before Jacques comes out. And just before I get my punch or I get kicked out of the ring by Abdullah the Butcher, Abdullah the Butcher told me, said, back off, get back off. You're Le Duc. Let the people see you. Let the people scream your name so they can remember all the feud that the Le Duc had against the Butcher and everything. Let's try to revolve that, you know. Let's try to bring that back up, you know.
Right, that's important. That's a veteran move right there. That's a veteran move telling you, get you shining, you know. He wants you to look good.
And What was your thought about
Abdullah the Butcher?
I
didn't want to interrupt your story. So finish your story. So what happened when Jacques went out there?
He went out there. He didn't have the pop he was supposed to have and everything. And then I was traveling with my dad. And then he called me up in my room and said, come meet me in the parking lot. I want to talk to you in the car and everything. And he started lecturing me and he started to make me try to make me cry and everything. Feel guilty that I tried to be the superstar. I tried to take his shine away and everything, you know. That's funny because Jacques got a story that he's a victim against the Bulldogs and everything, and now he do press conference in school teaching that bullying is not good, but he's a real bully, and until today he's still a bully, you know. So I got off tour, man. I got off tour and everything, you know, because after that incident and everything, you know. So my, I had a bad experience. And then John and Raymond, give me a call, give me a try to WWF. And then bad experience there, but it's not because of Joanne or Raymond, because they were really good to open me doors and everything, you know. I had a chance to meet a lot of people and everything, you know. And then, you know what, that allowed me to meet Owen Hart, and then Owen Hart brought me again to Bruce, and that's when I really learned, starting to really learn my craft, you know, and learning all the business work and worked hard. Take bumps in the dungeon and everything, and then be respected after that in the ring, because I was having a last name, but as a second generation, when you have a last name, you don't have any experience, and then your first time people try to teach you wrestling, you got screwed. It's pretty hard on your ego and everything. It's pretty hard to feel and walk into my shoes. You've always got pressure on your second generation. So if the door is open, it's because of your name. But if I do good, it's because of the name. But if I do bad, people will laugh at me. You're second generation, and you cannot lace up the boots like your dad or uncle. So the pressure is always there, you know?
Yeah,
so I had a bad
experience.
Yeah.
I was going to say the pressure is always there because they remember your dad or your uncle. But you know what I wanted to talk to you about, and this is probably going to be the last thing for tonight, and then we could pick this up if you can next week. But what I wanted to talk to you about now is Owen Hart. You had the opportunity to be in his sharpshooter, and there's a picture that I've seen on your Facebook, and it's got Owen Hart in it, you know, and you're in the sharpshooter, and James E. Cornette's on the, you know, in the ring, and the referee Cordaris is there. What would your first of all? Does it hurt? It's gotta hurt, right, when he's stretching you out like that?
Yeah, of course. You need to, you know, like all the older you can see in the ring, you know, it takes a toll on your body and everything, you know, and you need to be pretty much flexible to be able to get to that position and everything, you know. And one bad move of Owen, and if he really wanted to be dirty, he could end my career right there, you know. But he didn't.
Yeah.
So yes. Yeah. So that move could be that move can be really effective and really dangerous.
That's a dangerous move right there, but it's it's an effective move, and that move right there is the sharpshooter. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, check it out. It's a good move. A lot of wrestlers used it. There were a lot of French wrestlers years ago.
Yes.
When you talk about the French, you know, you talk about the Rougeau brothers or the Rougeaus. You talk about
Dino Bravo, Rick Martel, Frenchie Martin, you know, Pat Patterson,
right.
You know, and Ronnie Garvin.
Pat Patterson was a good guy too.
Yeah, and then Ronnie Garvin from the Fabulous from the Garvin's brother, you know, with the Precious in their corner, you know. I don't know if you know in the 80s, you know.
Jimmy Garvin.
Yeah, Jimmy Garvin, Ronnie Garvin. And you even saw Ronnie Garvin in the feud in WWF against Dino Bravo.
The Hammer.
He's French as well. He's French as – not a lot of people know that. And he's French
as
well and everything. Huh?
I didn't know that at all. You're,
no, because
you.
He
so
grew
you're,
up
you're,
after that. Because he stayed in the States and everything. But he's a guy that I had a chance to meet on my first tour because Jacques hired him to be a referee or something and everything. And then Ronnie Garvin is he speaks French, though. Not a lot of people know that. Maybe he's gonna kick my ass next time. I'm gonna see it, and next time he's gonna see me. But no, he speaks French. He's from out here, man.
Wow! I tell you what. Dino Bravo had the best side suplex I've ever seen.
Dino Bravo. Back then, it was the strongest and the more the fierce wrestler backstage. Everybody didn't want to go out in the back alley with him. So he was the strongest and the toughest backstage. He was a legit strong guy, you know.
Wow. That's definitely something to talk about for next time. And you know, and you talked about
hopefully,
you know,
because you know what, we talk about the bad experience. You know, I try to explain you how it works and give you a little bit stories with the superstars and everything. But I hope that next week we'll have time to talk about what I accomplished and what I did.
Oh, yeah, we will. I promise. We'll talk about the good.
And what the purpose why I'm still in this business, you know?
And why are we talking negative? And I'll tell you why. We're talking negative because we want the people to know what bullshit you went through first. You have to crawl before you can walk. So it's important.
There you
that
go.
I,
and
that
I, and I, as a second generation there, I learned it the hard way, you know. And today, I'm having my own. I'm promoting my own shows and everything. I've been teacher in different wrestling camps, and I try to teach the kids of today to not do the same mistakes or avoid the same mistake that I did so they can be successful in this hard wrestling business, you know? So,
right.
And then next week,
I was going to ask you, is there any questions that you want? Is there a question that you want me to ask, Dory Funk Jr. tonight?
If you can ask about Joe LeDuc, if he remembers about Joe LeDuc.
I will.
He's got stories about the LeDucs and everything. My dad and my uncle used to wrestle in Texas for their family back in the days and everything. And that could be nice to ask him for him. And he doesn't know me personally, but tell him that the nephews and the son of the LeDucs are sending him the best regards.
And I'll tell Smith Hawk the same thing.
Yeah, tell Smith also the same thing and everything there.
All
right. Magic Mike.
We're gonna end the show now, and I'm gonna end it with your theme music. Okay.
Cool. That sounds good, man.
And then next week, you come back and you call this number again, and I'll talk to you on Facebook. Okay, Carl.
Yeah, no problem. Be safe. Take care.
Thank you.
And,
you be safe, too. And here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Stay tuned later. The Heart Grapevine, 8 o'clock, live here on Blog Talk Radio. Call, take care, and here we go.
All the best.
Okay, buddy.
If you don't know, now you know. My name is Carl Excel, the size that hurts, the Quebec wrestling terrorist. I'm coming after you. You better bow down to the regime, 'cause I am the man. I will make you pay. You will show me respect. Call Excel, the size that hurts. La grandeur qui fait mal. La grandeur qui fait mal. That hurts, the Quebec wrestling terrorists. I'm coming after you. You better bow down to the regime, 'cause I am the man. I will make you pay. You